This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll look at the lawsuit filed over Wisconsin's new right-to-work law.
First, we're digging into a new report out about disparities in school punishment of black and white female students. Girls of color, especially black girls, are 6 times more likely to be suspended than their white classmates. To put this in perspective, African-American boys are 3 times more likely to be suspended than white.
Our next guest is the author of a report taking a look at the punishment gap for girls of different races, and she's here to talk about why this racial disparity is often overlooked and what can be done to help solve the problem. Kimberly Williams Crenshaw joins us. She's a law professor at Columbia University and UCLA. She's also the director of the Center for Intersectionality and the Social Policy Studies and the author of the report, Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Over-Policed, and Underprotected. Kimberly, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, what did you find out about how the experience of African-American girls is different from a lot of their peers at school?
Well, there are 2 ways that they're different. Number one, we found that the racial disparity between black girls and white girls, namely the difference between the suspension rates for black girls and white girls, is actually greater than the disparity between black boys and white boys. It's a fact that a lot of people would be surprised about, because more black boys overall are suspended than any other group, but boys generally are suspended more. When we look at girls, however, we find that black girls are suspended at rates that are 6 times the rates of white girls nationally. And then in New York and Boston, we found that black girls were suspended 10 times more often than white girls, and 11 times more often in Boston. So there's just a huge disparity in the actual experience of expulsion or suspension that girls face. And then we talked to them and got more information about how they actually experienced life in school-to-prison pipeline kind of schools.
And often when we're reading about issues of social justice or racial disparity in education and elsewhere, the focus tends to be on boys and on men. Why isn't there more attention to the race gap for women and girls?
Well, I think there are a couple reasons. Number one, the typical assumption is that race and racism is something that largely visits itself upon boys. It plays out between men and boys. People don't tend to think about racial disparity when they're thinking about women, when they're thinking about some of the things that happen to women of color, and as opposed to things that happen to white women. So there's just a tendency in our culture not to really think about racial disparity when we think and talk about women. So one of the objectives of the report is to introduce some of the ways that women are differentially situated, the way that race plays out between women. And I think the second reason, quite honestly, is that there are a lot of things that happen to men and boys that they're disproportionately subject to, like suspension. But there's also the reality that there are things that disproportionately happen to women of color, and we don't tend to talk about them. So we do live in a society that's shaped by race, but it's also shaped by gender. And a lot of times the things that happen to women and girls just aren't seen as significant or as critical as they should be. So one of the points of the report is to try to intervene into that and change people's conception of how important these issues are.
There's also some commonly held ideas out there that girls in general do better in school than boys, that they mature faster, they have an easier time sitting still and focusing. Does that come into play at all here?
It comes into play in any number of ways. So one of the problems that some of the young women who had been suspended told us was that they many times felt that they were being punished for things that were gender non-normative. In other words, when they acted in ways that were not consistent with the stereotype, the girls sit there, you know, they're well-behaved, they're quiet, and they're focused. Girls who are not just sitting, girls who are talking out in class, girls who are really active, who are seen as being too aggressive, they say that they are subject to penalties because they're not acting in the way that girls are thought to act. When you take that into account and put race into the mix, we know, you know, from some of the events that have happened lately, that race tends to be associated associated, blackness tends to be associated with a greater level of aggressiveness. You put that on top of the idea that girls are not supposed to be aggressive, and you have a sense of some of the intersectional ways that race and gender play out as risk factors for black girls. So a lot of these assumptions about girls that tell us that we don't have to pay attention to them, it's precisely the reason why we do have to pay attention to girls, and black girls in particular, because they're subject to a whole range of stereotypes and punishment because of that.
Now, you looked at some schools and you talked with African-American girls who went there. Can you tell us a story or two about what they said?
Well, so we talked to young women at this point who had been girls who'd been steered out of school. And we wanted to get a sense of what the trajectory was, what some of the things were that led them to have difficulties in school. And we found a couple of things. One is that many of the girls said that as students, it was clear to them that these were zero-tolerance environments that were not necessarily invested in their education. So they said teachers would tell them that they were going to get paid whether they learned or not. They talked about being pushed out of school at the end of the day for being in the hall when they shouldn't be in the hall. There's just a general focus on punishment gave the message that education was not important. They also indicated that sometimes they felt that they were unfairly punished for defending themselves. So some of the girls talked about having been sexually harassed. One woman said that she responded to a boy who was harassing her. He punched her in the eye. She responded. They both got suspended. So they talk about how zero tolerance policies actually create environments in which they don't necessarily feel safe. They don't like having to go through metal detectors, taking off their clothes. They feel exposed. Some are triggered. And at the same time, the existence of these policies don't really protect them against some of the things that push them out of school. So we heard a lot of stories about what happens to girls in school that makes it difficult for them to stay attached, and suggestions for ways that some of the school policies might be better shaped to respond to girls' particular needs.
Well, one thing you're trying to tease out of this is life outcomes for these girls. If an African-American girl gets expelled, ends up in the legal system, gets funneled into a different school, what kind of effect does that have on her future?
Yeah, so some of the stories have just been absolutely, jaw-dropping. One young lady in another state told us about how she was arrested for being truant, for being late to school repeatedly, and directly funneled into the juvenile justice system and wound up in solitary confinement. So it's not an exaggeration or a metaphor when we say that many of these schools have school-to-prison pipelines. They're many times direct. What we also find is just the emphasis on punishment discourages girls from attaching to school and leading many of them not to graduate. We know that when girls, particularly low-income girls of color, fail to graduate, the long-term economic consequences for them are greater than for any other group. So they're already funneled into low-wage layers in the job market. If you don't get a high school diploma, you're less likely to even get those jobs. Women, low-income women, make less than their male counterparts, so not being able to graduate means that you're going to make even less than that. So we're trying to elevate the long-term consequences of some of these school policies, both for the girls and their future social economic well-being, but also for their families. These families that most of these women will go on to lead are disproportionately families that are single-headed. So if we're looking at a single head who doesn't have the same job prospects, doesn't have the same income, doesn't have the same access to wealth, we know that the consequences are going to be shared by her and her children, both the boys and the girls. So that's one of the reasons we're trying to elevate this into the discussion about the national agenda on achievement and push-out.
You talked about the zero tolerance policies and how you feel that those are not effective. What are effective ways that schools can approach things that might fall under the umbrella of punishment, but maybe you don't even want to use that word?
Exactly. With some of the girls, it's clear that the circumstances that lead them to be disciplined are many times the effects of trauma. One young lady indicated that she had been sexually assaulted. She was not able to get effective counseling in the school or elsewhere, and eventually the trauma around that erupted, and she became a discipline problem rather than someone who had untreated trauma. So one of the things that many advocates are calling for, particularly as some of the resources are shifting away from having a heavy police presence in the school, is to use some of these resources to provide for better staffing of counseling, other forms of intervention, other ways in which girls are identified as having needs before they become statistics in a disciplinary regime. That's a big, big issue. But the girls have also said a couple things. That one of the things that discourages them is when they do achieve, their achievements are not always celebrated, partly because we assume that girls are going to do well. But when girls do well and their accomplishments are not celebrated, partly because we are much more concerned about the fallout of our boys, it leads them many times to find other activities around which they will be recognized and celebrated by their peers, and those aren't activities that always lead to long-term consequences for the girls. So we know we need to have supports for them. We know that many of the girls actually have caretaking responsibilities. Some of them are their own children. Some of them are other family members. So we need to have the capacity to allow those girls who have caretaking to be able to attend school in a way that they're not punished for being late or not subject to other disciplinary consequences because sometimes they have other responsibilities.
We're talking right now with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw. She's the author of the report, Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Overpoliced, and Underprotected.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest or maybe your experiences. If you've seen this firsthand as a student, a parent, an educator, how do you see these gaps in the way kids are disciplined play out between girls of color and white kids? Why do you think there is this kind of disparity in schools? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation and get to your calls in a minute. Right now, a check of the latest headlines with Kristen Durst from WPR News.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw about her new report, Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Overpoliced, and Underprotected.
She finds disparity between punishments of white girls in schools and black girls. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think might cause that? Have you seen this firsthand as a student, a teacher, or a parent? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let's talk for a bit about solutions, if we can, Kimberly. You talked about helping girls to feel supported in school. What would that look like?
Well, one of the things it would look like is not punishing girls for and sending them to jail for just being late to school. That's just it was amazing to us how that came up and how many of the girls talked about that. But they also talked about just the very fact that because there have been so many moments where the social safety net has been shredded, girls actually face heavier responsibilities for their family members. They're often the caretakers of last resort. So for siblings and family members who are incarcerated, for those who have mental disorders, drug dependency, or who need interpretation or translation in dealing with government officials, there's just a lot of stress and pressure on girls that sometimes makes it difficult for them to perform in school, to actually be in school on a regular basis. So they need to be able to integrate in school and also be able to carry some of their responsibilities. But also, one of the big things that some of the women talked about was just they felt that there were a range of stereotypes that teachers held against them, and these were often teachers, some of whom who shared the same race. The idea that the girls were defiant, that they were too aggressive, that they were not proper ladies, and the job of the school was to confine and constrain them so that they would, you know, learn what some of the mores and behavioral expectations were. So we know that we need gender sensitive and culturally competent training for teachers to be able to identify and to some extent be aware of sometimes the cognitive and other kind of biases that play out against girls of color. There has been a conversation and there have been efforts to bring more men of color into the educational arena on the assumption that they will have fewer of these biases against boys boys of color, we haven't quite been able to think and talk about the way that, you know, some people have biases against girls of color, and that has to be addressed as urgently as some of the biases against the boys.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Yvette with us in Whitewater. Hi, Yvette.
Well, hi there. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
You know, I'm really struck by this conversation. I just want to say I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, about a half a block from 8 Mile Road, and I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken with, I was the only white girl who worked there, and I was working two jobs so I could pay for college, and I got to see some of the students that sort of you're describing firsthand as a 14-year-old, and now it's 30 years later, I'm a school teacher, and I've been teaching for 20 years. I guess when I listen to this conversation, I don't feel that I'm biased as a teacher one way or the other. I mean, we all have biases, but I guess my first concern is that what are the communities going to be doing about this? Because it seems like it's a community issue, you know, an individual community issue.
Great. I think I've got the gist of what you're saying, Yvette, and we're really short of time. I want to make sure Kimberly gets to respond to this. Thank you for your call. And Kimberly, is this a community issue? If we focus in on schools, are we only looking at a tiny portion of the picture here that actually needs to be looked at to address this? And I'm sorry, we're kind of short on time at this point.
Yeah, so I'll have to answer really quickly. Of course, it's a community issue. And part of our point is to say that we already have a dialogue that's been going on for several years about the risk factors that face boys of color. We have a national campaign called My Brother's Keeper that recognizes it's a community issue as well as a school issue. What we're simply offering information to help people think about more clearly is that it is also a community and school issue for girls. So every way in which we are thinking about putting together community resources to raise the public awareness and the public will to intervene in productive ways in the lives of boys, we also have to match those efforts with respect to girls because they are not, in fact, doing okay. And that is the most significant part of the report that we hope there's uptake on.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw. She's a law professor at Columbia University and UCLA and director of the Center for Intersectionality and Social Policy Studies. She was with us to talk about her new report. It's called Black Girls Matter.